You are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome again to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and a lot more. So if we're against so much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. At time of recording, it's going to be 175 degrees. So I have a fan on. I hope that it's not too distracting, but I absolutely couldn't do this show without it. So with that being said, we're going to dive into this. The next two programs are going to be the Anti's Salute to Women. The last new episode that was aired was episode 50, and it was depressing as hell. So the next few episodes are going to try and be a little bit more optimistic, a little bit more emboldening to any allies and comrades who would be inspired by some of the great women in the socialist movement as a whole. And also some topics that have lately come to my attention that I think everybody needs to think about. So for this first episode in a brief series called The Anti's Salute to Women, we are going to be reading a slightly abridged, but not very abridged version of a transcript of Lucy Parsons' speech to the founding convention of the IWW, or the Industrial Workers of the World, of which I am a member. Who was Lucy Parsons? Well, obviously, her life is far too complicated to sum up in just a few seconds, but suffice it to say that she was a very famous woman of Native American, African American, and Mexican ancestry who was very involved in the labor movement in the late 19th century and is one of the most well-known anarchist organizers in history. So we will go back to Chicago, 1905, and we will read Lucy Parsons' speech to the founding convention of the Industrial Workers of the World. And again, the only parts that I'm going to abridge are parts that aren't necessarily segments of the speech as a whole, because the source that I'm drawing this from is literally a direct transcript of the entire thing. So it's got little pleasantries and stuff like that that we're just going to not include for the sake of time. We, the women of this country, have no ballot even if we wished to use it. And the only way that we can be represented is to take a man to represent us. You men have made such a mess of it in representing us that we have not much confidence in asking you. And I, for one, feel very backward in asking the men to represent me. We have no ballot, but we have our labor. I think it is August Bebel in his Woman in the Past, Present, and Future, a book that should be read by every woman that works for wages. I think it is Bebel that says that men have been slaves throughout all the ages, but that woman's condition has been far worse, for she has been the slave of a slave. I think there was never a greater truth uttered. We are the slaves of the slaves. We are exploited more ruthlessly than men. Wherever wages are to be reduced, the capitalist class use women to reduce them. And if there is anything that you men should do in the future, it is to organize the women. And I tell you that if the women had inaugurated a boycott of the state street stores since the Teamster strike, they would have surrendered long ago. Applause. I do not strike before you to brag. I had no man connected with that strike to make it of interest to me to boycott the stores, but I have not bought one penny's worth there since the strike was inaugurated. I intended to boycott all of them as one individual at least, so it is important to educate the women. Now I wish to show my sisters here that we fasten the chains of slavery upon our sisters, sometimes unwittingly, when we go down to the department store and look around for cheap bargains and go home and exhibit what we have got so cheap. When we come to reflect, it simply means the robbery of our sisters, for we know that the things cannot be made for such prices and give the women who made them fair wages. I wish to say that I have attended many conventions in the 27 years since I came here to Chicago, a young girl, so full of life and animation and hope. It is to youth that hope comes. It is to age that reflection comes. I have attended conventions from the day, from that day to this, of one kind and another, and taken part in them. And I've taken part in some in which our comrade Debs had a part. I was at the organization that he organized in this city some 8 or 10 years ago, and that's Eugene Debs, by the way. Now the point I want to make is that these conventions are full of enthusiasm, and that's right. We should sometimes mix sentiment with soberness. It is a part of life. But as I know from experience, there are sober moments ahead of us. And when you go out of this hall, when you have laid aside your enthusiasm, then comes solid work. Are you going out with the reflection that you appreciate and grasp the situation that you are to tackle? Are you going out of here with your minds made up that the class in which we call ourselves revolutionary socialists, so-called, that class is organized to meet organized capital with the millions at its command? It has many weapons to fight us. First, it has money. Then it has legislative tools. Then it has its judiciary. It has its army and its navy. It has its guns. It has armories. And last, it has the gallows. We call ourselves revolutionists. Do you know what the capitalists mean to do to you revolutionists? I simply throw these hints out that you young people may become reflective and know what you have to face at the first, and then it will give you strength. I am not here to cause any discouragement, but simply to encourage you to go on in your grand work. Now, that is the solid foundation that I hope this organization will be built on, that it may be built not like a house upon the sand, that when the waves of adversity come, it may go over into the ocean of oblivion, but that shall be built upon a strong, granite-hard foundation, a foundation made up of the hearts and aspirations of the men and women of this 20th century who have set their minds, their bands, their hearts, and their heads against the past with all its miserable poverty, with its wage slavery, with its children ground into dividends, with its miners away down under the earth and with never the light of sunshine, and with its women selling the holy name of womanhood for a day's board. I hope we understand that this organization has set its face against that iniquity, and that it has set its eyes to the rising star of liberty. That means fraternity, solidarity, the universal brotherhood of man. I hope that while politics have been mentioned here, I am not one of those who, because a man or a woman disagrees with me, cannot act with them. I'm glad and proud to say I am too broad-minded to say they are a fakir or fool or a fraud because they disagree with me. My view may be narrow and theirs may be broad, but I do say to those who have intimated politics here as being necessary or a part of this organization that I do not impute to them dishonesty or impure motives. But as I understand the call for this convention, politics had no place here. It was simply to be an economic organization, and I hope for the good of this organization that when we go away from this hall and our comrades go some to the west, some to the east, some to the north, and some to the south, while some remain in Chicago, and all spread this light over this broad land and carry the message of what this convention has done, that there will be no room for politics at all. There may be room for politics. I have nothing to say about that, but it is a bread and butter question, an economic issue upon which the fight must be made. Now, what do we mean when we say revolutionary socialist? We mean that the land shall belong to the landless, the tools to the toiler, and the products to the producers. Applause. Now, let us analyze that for just a moment before you applaud me. First, the land belongs to the landless. Is there a single landowner in this country who owns his land by the constitutional rights given by the Constitution of the United States who will allow you to vote it away from him? I am not such a fool as to believe it. We say the tools belong to the toiler. They are owned by the capitalist class. Do you believe they will allow you to go into the halls of the legislature and simply say, be it enacted that on and after a certain day, the capitalists shall no longer own the tools and the factories and the places of industry, the ships that plow the ocean and our lakes? Do you believe that they will submit? I do not. We say the products belong to the producers. It belongs to the capitalist class as their legal property. Do you think that they will allow you to vote them away from them by passing a law and saying, be it enacted, that on and after a certain day, Mr. Capitalist shall be dispossessed? You may, but I do not believe it. Hence, when you roll under your tongue the expression that you are revolutionists, remember what that word means. It means a revolution that shall turn all these things over where they belong to the wealth producers. Now, how shall the wealth producers come into possession of them? I believe that if every man and every woman who works, or who toils in the mines, the mills, the workshops, the fields, the factories, and the farms in our broad America should decide in their minds that they shall have that which of right belongs to them, and that no idler shall live upon their toil. And when your new organization, your economic organization, shall declare as man to man and woman to woman, as brothers and sisters, that you are determined that you will possess these things, then there is no army that is large enough to overcome you, for you yourselves constitute that army. Now, when you have decided that you will take possession of these things, there will not need to be one gun fired or one scaffold erected. You will simply come into your own, by your own independence and your own manhood, and by asserting your own individuality, and not sending any man to any legislature in any state of the American Union to enact a law that you shall have what is your own, yours by nature, and by your manhood, and by your very presence upon this earth. Nature has been lavish to her children. She has placed in this earth all the material of wealth that is necessary to make men and women happy. She has given us brains to go into her storehouse and bring from its recesses all that is necessary. She has given us these two hands and these brains to manufacture them suited to the wants of men and women. Our civilization stands on a parallel with all other civilizations. There is just one thing we lack. And we have only ourselves to blame if we do not become free. We simply lack the intelligence to take possession of that which we have produced. And I believe and I hope and I feel that the men and women who constitute a convention like this can come together and organize that intelligence. I must say that I do not know whether I am saying anything that interests you or not. But I feel so delighted that I am talking to your heads and not to your hands and feet this afternoon. I believe that you will at least listen to me and maybe you will disagree with me, but I care not. I simply want to shed the light as I see it. I wish to say that my conception of the future method of taking possession of this is that of the general strike. That is my conception of it. The trouble with all the strikes in the past has been this. The working men, like the Teamsters in our cities, these hard-working Teamsters, strike and go out and starve. Their children starve. Their wives get discouraged. Some feel that they have to go out and beg for relief and to get a little coal to keep the children warm, or a little bread to keep the wife from starving, or a little something to keep the spark of life in them so that they can remain wage slaves. That is the way with the strikes in the past. My conception of the strike of the future is not to strike and go out and starve, but to strike and remain in and take possession of the necessary property of production. If anyone is to starve, I do not say it is necessary, let it be the capitalist class. They have starved us so long enough, while they have had wealth and luxury and all that is necessary. You men and women should be imbued with the spirit that is now displayed in far-off Russia and far-off Siberia, where we thought the spark of manhood and womanhood had been crushed out of them. Let us take example from them. We see the capitalist class fortifying themselves today behind their citizens' associations and employers' associations in order that they may crush the American labor movement. Let us cast our eyes over to far-off Russia and take heart and courage from those who are fighting the battle there. and from the further fact shown in the dispatches that appear this morning in the news that carries the greatest terror to the capitalist class throughout the world. The emblem that has been the terror of all tyrants through all the ages. And there you will see that the red flag has been raised. Applause. According to the Tribune, the greatest terror is evinced in Odessa and all through Russia because the red flag has been raised. They know that where the red flag has been raised, whoever enrolled themselves beneath that flag recognize the universal brotherhood of man. They recognize that the red current that flows through the veins of all humanity is identical, that the ideas of all humanity are identical, that those who raise the red flag, it matters not where, whether on the sunny plains of China or on the sun-beaten hills of Africa or on the far-off snow-capped shores of the North or in Russia or in America, that they all belong to the human family and have an identity of interest. Applause. That is what they know. So when we come to decide, let us sink such differences as nationality, religion, politics, and set our eyes eternally and forever towards the rising star of the Industrial Republic of Labor. Remember that we have left the old behind and have set our faces toward the future. There is no power on earth that can stop men and women who are determined to be free at all hazards. There is no power on earth so great as the power of intellect. It moves the world and it moves the earth. Now, in conclusion, I wish to say to you, and you will excuse me because of what I am going to say and only attribute it to my interest in humanity. I wish to say that 19 years ago, on the 4th of May of this year, I was one of those at a meeting at the Haymarket in this city to protest against 11 working men being shot to pieces at a factory in the southeastern part of this city because they had dared to strike for the 8-hour movement that was to be inaugurated in America in 1886. The Haymarket meeting was called primarily and entirely to protest against the murder of comrades at the McCormick factory. When that meeting was nearing its close, someone threw a bomb. No one knows to this day who threw it except the man who threw it. Possibly he has rendered his account with nature and has passed away. But no human being alive knows who threw it. And yet in the soil of Illinois, the soil that gave a Lincoln to America, the soil in which the great, magnificent Lincoln was buried in the state that was supposed to be the most liberal in the Union, 5 men sleep the last sleep in Waldheim under a monument that has been raised there because they dared to raise their voices for humanity. I say to any of you who are here and who can do so, it is well worth your time to go out there and draw some inspiration about around the graves of the first martyrs who fell in the great industrial struggle for liberty on American soil. Applause. I say to you that even within the sound of my voice, only 2 short blocks from where we meet today, the scaffold was erected on which those 5 men paid the penalty for daring to raise their voices against the iniquities of the age in which we live. We are assembled here for the same purpose. And do any of you older men remember the telegrams that were sent out from Chicago while our comrades were not yet even cut down from the cruel gallows? Anarchy is dead, and these miscreants have been put out of the way. Oh, friends, I'm sorry that I even had to use that word, anarchy, just now in your presence, which was not in my mind at the outset. So if any of you wish to go out there and look at this monument that has been raised by those who believed in their comrades' innocence and sincerity, I will ask you, when you've gone out and looked at the monument, that you will go to the reverse side of the monument and there read on the reverse side the words of a man, himself the purest and noblest man who ever sat in the gubernatorial chair of the state of Illinois, John P. Altgeld. On that moment, you will read the clause of his message in which he pardoned the men who were lingering then in Joliet. I have nothing more to say. I ask you to read the words of Altgeld, who was at that time the governor, and had been a lawyer and a judge, and knew whereof he spoke. And then take out your copybooks and copy the words of Altgeld when he released those who had not been slaughtered at the capitalists' behest. And then take them home and change your minds about what those men were put to death for. Now, I have taken up your time in this because I simply feel that I have a right as a mother and as a wife of one of those sacrificed men to say whatever I can to bring the light to bear upon this conspiracy and to show you the way it was. Now, I thank you for the time that I have taken up of yours. I hope that we will meet again sometime, you and I, in some hall where we can meet and organize the wage workers of America, the men and women, so that the children may not go into the factories, nor the women into the factories, unless they go under proper conditions. I hope even now to live to see the day when the first dawn of the new era of labor will have arisen, when capitalism will be a thing of the past, and the new industrial republic, the Commonwealth of Labor, shall be in operation. I thank you. And for the record, for those who were curious, the inscription on the rear of the Haymarket Monument in Chicago reads, "These charges are of a personal character, and while they seem to be sustained by the record of the trial and the papers before me, and tend to show that the trial was not fair, I do not care to discuss this feature of the case any farther, because it is not necessary. I am convinced that it is clearly my duty to act in this case for the reasons already given, and I therefore grant an absolute pardon to Samuel Fielden, Oscar Niebe, and Michael Schwab this 26th day of June, 1893. John P. Altgeld, Governor of Illinois." And John Altgeld would earn the derisive nickname John Pardon Altgeld by capitalists who wish that he would have sentenced those workers to death. It's also worth mentioning that if you get a chance to visit the Haymarket Monument, it's almost always got pennies on it, union pins, flowers. It's visited quite frequently, and it's really one of those things that is a testament to the history of America and the history of class struggle. So, in the few minutes that we have remaining in this week's episode, I'd like to comment on this speech that Lucy Parsons gave to the very first convention of the Industrial Workers of the World. The website of the Industrial Workers of the World has a frequently asked questions section. And one of the questions is the Industrial Workers of the World an anarcho-syndicalist union? And the website says very plainly, no, it's not. And the website is very right to make that distinction. It isn't. The IWW is nothing more than a national solidarity union with its primary mission to demolish capitalism. It will surprise nobody to know that many members of the Industrial Workers of the World are anarchists of a certain stripe or another, as was Lucy Parsons, as was Helen Keller, it may surprise you to know, who was also a wobbly. And the list goes on of influential women who aligned themselves with the working class and the labor struggle and, unsurprisingly, anarchism. I wanted to start off this brief series on my favorite women in the labor movement with this speech, partially because it came into my feed somewhat recently and it always moves me to read it, but also because of what Lucy Parsons is, who she was, and the incredible importance of her, just the reality of her demographics. She was a woman of color in an era when women and women of color had no prospects. The world is bleak for women and especially women of color today in 2019. Bleak does not even begin to describe the situation in 1905 and earlier, when Lucy Parsons was most active in the late 1800s. The IWW stood since the very beginning as a completely inclusive organization. It was one of the very first labor movements to not just include women and people of color, but to have them in high leadership organizational roles, because it was understood that there is no distinction among us based on such ridiculous skin deep definitions. Now, that's not in any way to reduce the importance of fellow workers like Lucy Parsons and Emma Goldman and Rosa Luxemburg and Helen Keller. All of them represent the best parts of humanity. And the fact that they were women, especially in their eras, should astound and impress everybody who learns about their lives and the work that they did. Thank you for tuning in to this, the 51st episode of The Anti, here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to our freedom and awesome shared potential. And in particular, the incredible role that women play in the struggle for emancipation. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. And as always, more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com. Stay tuned. As always, there's going to be really great programming coming up following this this show on River West Radio. Keep your smart speaker tuned. Keep your radio tuned. Listen to us streaming on riverwestradio.com. And if you want to, please do reach out and support us. Local radio, small, low-power radio needs your help. Censorship is a very real thing. This station does a great job of lifting marginalized voices. And if you want to talk on the radio, get in touch with us and become a steward of the station. In the meantime, what's coming up this week, Sandy?